Welcome to your turn, Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us. We're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m., and we're archived on our homepage. So if you can't listen to the entire show or if you want to hear it again at a later date, just look us up, click and poke. And today we've got a double header in one person. Tammy Flanagan is very well known to our audience and to others. She's a columnist for Government Executive Magazine. She's with a specialist, I guess, senior benefit specialist with the National Institute of Transition Planning, and she frequently does the Your Turn, For Your Benefit show every Monday here on WFED. So, Tammy, thank you for coming in this beautiful day.
Thanks for having me, Mike. Good morning.
We got a lot of fan mail for you. And by the way, our telephone number here, if you have a question for Tammy, is 202-465-3080. That's 202-465-3080. And you can give us a call. We'll take it. Anyway, here's a question from John at OPM. And he's talking about your article in Government Executive last week, and he relates it to his situation. He said, I have about $400,000 in my TSP after a 36% hit. I guess that's for taxes. And my TSP estimated $2,100 in a monthly annuity. If Tammy is correct in her article, shouldn't I receive 80% of $6,000 or about $4,800 per month? Just getting off this TSP watch ride will be worth retiring for. Having maxed up my contributions since becoming a Fed in 1992, the trip I and all other TSP Feds have been on is like riding the Beltway blindfolded. You know the hit's coming, just not when, by what, or how badly. I had to stick with a C fund like so many others after serious losses because I don't buy high and sell low. I'm heading out June 2013 and like to plan ahead. Got to recoup the losses until January 2013, and then it all goes into the G fund. Thanks for keeping up the good work. A lot of questions there.
Well, he's referring to a column I wrote about comparing. I was trying to compare or at least give some sense of security to someone who transferred from the old system to the new. And, you know, we all think, oh, my goodness, what was he thinking to transfer from civil service to FERS? So this guy had done that back in 87. He only had 5 years under civil service, wasn't sure about his future, so he decided that FERS would be more flexible, which it was. But here he is now, you know, 30 years of government service, and he didn't leave. He's under FERS, you know, and thinking he made this terrible mistake. So my column was showing that even though he switched to FERS and he has a much smaller basic annuity, and he has his Social Security coverage, and now he's really done a good job of saving in his TSP. He saved up $500,000,
yeah.
Or he will have that, or he plans to have that in the next 5 years. So what I was showing in the column was that between his FERS basic benefit, his Social Security benefit, that those two alone would bring him within $6,000 a year of what he would have had he stayed under civil service.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So all he needed to do was withdraw, you know, $6,000 a year from his $500,000 in the thrift, and he would be where he was if he had stayed under civil service. And I think some people were misinterpreting what I said to think that that's all he could take out of the thrift. You can take as much as
sure.
you want out.
Take it all out.
Yeah, take it all out if you want. But I think easily he could take out $6,000 this year, $7,000 next year, and even make up for the so-called diet colas or FERS, where he's not going to get a cost of living until he's 62, he should still be okay. So my point was trying to say that you could switch to FERS, you could be under FERS, and still have a retirement comparable to what your coworkers under the old system had. It's the future I'm worried about, you know, for the new kids coming out of college that might just have a retirement called SAVE. But I think FERS is actually, you know, I think it's a great system compared to what it could be.
Well, the email we got from John at OPM, too, he's talking about having $400,000 in his TSP.
He's done very well.
He's done well, mm-hmm. And he's kind of lamenting the ups and downs of the stock market. But if he stayed in the C fund, that was smart. Had he sold, he would have been selling low back in 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and it just now be recovering. But I think the stock market is at an all-time high
right now.
Yeah,
it's doing really good right now. And that's the thing. You can't really watch it day to day because
exactly.
You drive yourself crazy and you
right.
do the wrong thing. I think what you do need to do, and what scares me about what he wrote, is he says in 2013 it all goes in the G fund. Apparently he's thinking in terms of being retired and just keeping it, playing it safe.
Yeah.
But he might be playing it too safe. I think you still need to be diversified. You know, I'm not the financial advisor. I always
yeah.
have to qualify that. But from what I understand about financial planning, you still have to have diversifications to have growth. And it takes a little risk.
Right. Neither one of us can or should be giving financial advice.
Right.
But the reason they set up that present day life cycle fund is for the purpose you state. It's to give you stocks, bonds, and you have minimal exposure to the stock market, but you do have some.
That's
so
right.
That's another thing that John might want to consider.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
you think he's done very well? And,
And
okay, very good. All right. Here's one from Alan at IRS. Here's a question I'm hoping Tammy Flanagan can address. I'm a CSRS employee who will have 39 years service in July 2012. I plan to retire near that date and would like to know what's the best date to retire. I want to be sure to get my annuity check for July and also work the maximum days possible. What effect would the July 4th holiday have on my decision? While it would be nice to get paid for the July 4th holiday, I don't want that decision to jeopardize my July annuity payment.
Yeah, he missed that boat. It used to be last couple of years, maybe not even last year, but the year before and the year before that, you could have retired, let's say, July 3rd, and that would have been the July 4th holiday, and it would have been perfect for CSRS. But the thing you have to realize is, and this is only for civil service retirement, the old system, as we call it, that you can retire on the first, second, or third day of the month, and your retirement will begin the next day. So you could retire July 1st, 2nd, or 3rd, and you would still get a check for the month of July. It may not come in August, but it may come, you know, next July, but you will still get a check paid back to that month. Where if he was to retire on July 4th, sure, he would get paid for the holiday, but he would lose out the whole July retirement check. And especially for a CSRS employee where they might be replacing 50 to 80% of their salary with that retirement, that's not a good trade-off. So I would forfeit the last holiday and still go out no later than July 3rd, which I think this year is probably like a Tuesday. And if you wanted to retire on June 30th, I guess, you know, that's the end of the pay period. That's the Saturday. That would be fine, too. There's nothing wrong with June 30th. The benefit of staying until July 3rd for a CSRS employee this year would be it would give them 3 more days of salary, or 2 more days of salary, actually, because Sunday's not a salary day, but 3 more days of service, which they might need if they're short a couple of days to get to another month. But there's no big advantage of staying till July 3rd unless you need those extra 3 days. So June 30th is fine. July 3rd is okay. I would not retire July 4th to get the holiday. That's definitely a no.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's interesting. We've talked about this before, but some people really get down in the weeds with this and want an extra day. And in the past, the columns that I've done based on what you have done, we tend to focus on the end of the year, the popular months, December and January.
Right.
And that's when it really gets into it, and we can maybe talk about that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's one from... he doesn't want us to say. It says, will there be a second round of buyouts later in FY 2012 or early 2013? Short answer, we don't know. March is sort of the end of the buyout season because that's when it ceases to be financially beneficial for agencies to pay people to leave. But given the budget ramifications and the talk about sequestration in 2013, January 2013, and what may even happen over the summer, I would say there's a good chance that the buyouts will pick up again in October of this year, that being the start of the 2013 fiscal year. And you mentioned that census is doing buyouts right now.
That's right. Yep.
And they have 400 spaces. They've got 200 people who've applied for them. And they have to be off the rolls by the end of this month. So they're still popping up from places.
Yeah, there are several places I've been lately where that's become a talk of the town.
Right.
And others where it's not happening at all.
Yeah.
It just depends on the budget. Like you said, the budget of the agency.
Yeah. He says, this is interesting. We definitely won't identify it. But he says, I work at an agency where the computers are monitored when telework was initiated at our agency. So if your mouse isn't constantly moving, the boss knows it. So I'll bet some people have gotten ways around that. But he said, I want to contribute the TSP Roth IRA before I retire. So the best date, which I read somewhere, was November 3rd, 2012 for FY13. Is this still accurate? I'm not sure what he's talking about here.
Well, there is a benefit to November 3rd only because it is the last day of a pay period. It's the last day of leave period number 22 this year. And for someone who's not trying to save up a lot of leave, you know, maybe that's a good date for them because they'll get out before the crowds at the end of the year, and you know, they're not worried about saving up those extra couple of accumulations of leave that they'd get if they stayed another 4 or 5 pay periods. Another benefit I'd say to November 3rd, for especially for a FERS employee who's high salary, would be if they leave on November 3rd, there's a good chance they're going to get their lump sum payment for their unused annual leave this year, which you might think, why would you want your leave check this year? Well, if you're maxed out on the Social Security tax, which is at $110,100 this year. So if you make above $110,100, you stop paying the FICA tax. That's the 4.2% payroll tax. So if you cashed in your leave this year and it's considered part of this year's income, then you might not have to pay the 4.2% tax.
Wow. Okay. Need to take a short break here. We'll be right back talking with Tammy Flanagan about the best day for you to retire.
Now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Federal managers say they feel left out of key discussions between agency leaders and employees' unions. At some agencies, they're not invited to forums meant to encourage cooperation between management and labor groups, but they're the ones who have to carry out many of the decisions that come from those meetings. They gave Office of Personnel Management Director John Barry an earful recently at the Federal Managers Association conference in Washington.
Attention new federal employees. WEPA is currently offering up to $100,000 of life insurance on a guaranteed basis to those individuals within 180 days of their original federal hire date. No medical exam or physician's reports required. WEPA, a nonprofit association founded in 1943, provides life insurance at rates significantly less than the federal program. WEPA also offers premium refunds and a college scholarship program. Visit WAEPA.org to learn more. Once again, WAEPA.org.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Nominations are now open for the 5th Annual AFSEA Bethesda Government-Wide Initiatives Excellence Awards. These awards recognize individuals or a group of individuals whose contributions in information technology have significance across and beyond their agency or organization. Nominations are for federal employees with the exception of one Outstanding Achievement Award for industry and can be made by government or industry partners. Go to afseabethesda.org/nomination to make your nomination. Deadline for nominations is Friday, March 30th.
Giving you the edge on healthy living, here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge.
We tell patients that every medical option out there has to be explored first. At that point, they may consider having deep brain stimulation done.
Deep brain stimulation, or DBS, is sort of like a pacemaker for the brain. Tiny electrical shocks, short circuit, or jam abnormal signals in very specific parts of the brain. It can be effective in relieving the symptoms of patients with movement disorders like Parkinson's disease, essential tremor, or dystonia. Mayo Clinic Dr. Jerry Evidente feels the potential of deep brain stimulation is just starting to be realized.
What I'm excited about would be the potential applications of DBS for headaches.
Restless leg syndrome and epilepsy are two other areas of research. There's also ongoing investigation into whether deep brain stimulation slows or even reverses Parkinson's disease. For more information, talk to your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Vivian Williams.
My advice to you, until they upgrade the system, simply turn off PhotoStream on your iPhone the next time you're in Vegas, and then it doesn't go anywhere.
Okay.
Or else, change your Vegas behavior, or else, don't take pictures while you're in Vegas. So now, once you've deleted all the photos in the PhotoStream, you've got to then go to the camera roll and delete those individuals.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Join the Brain Trust of Federal Leaders this April 15th through 18th in Cambridge, Maryland for the Federal Senior Management Conference and feed off the thoughts, experiences, and ideas of your peers while tackling timely management issues being faced by government today. Presented by Fed Insider News, the Federal Senior Management Conference is the preeminent conference for federal senior managers. Presented for government, by government, and open only to government employees. Register now at fedsmc.com or call 202-237-0300.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Tammy Flanagan. She's a columnist for Government Executive Magazine and a co-host here on the four-year benefit show that is on WFED 1500 every Monday at 10 o'clock. And you co-host along with Bob Lyons, occasionally John Elliott, and other experts in the field. Got a number of emails this morning for Tammy. We've been going through those on the subject being the best day to retire. That's something that Tammy invented, discovered, pioneered, and I latched onto it. And it's when I do it, and I think when you do it, it's among the most popular columns of the year because you would think it's
a
no-brainer. But yeah, it is very important. And as we were saying during the break, when it started, it was fairly important, and you knew the December 31st, January 3rd formula, but so much has changed. Now you can look at it on a monthly basis. Here's an email from Kathy with the Census Bureau, and she says, can you run this by Tammy to see if she agrees? I have 17 years of service, and she'll be in her 60s in August 2012. I think the best date for me is January 11th, 2013. The last day of the 27th pay period is January 12th. One, I can get an extra 8 hours of annual leave accrual. Two, there will be two pay periods in 2013, pay periods 26 and 27, that I can put all of my salary minus deductions into the TSP. Smart move. Three, an extra holiday, New Year's Day. Four, the last pay period's check earned in January is more than my monthly annuity, so it's no loss that my annuity won't start until February 1. Can you run these by Tammy and see if she agrees?
Yeah, this is what we were talking about during the break. I was saying that, you know, sometimes we're kind of rethinking this best date being the last day of the month because people like Kathy, who have 17 years of service, her FERS retirement's only going to be worth 17% of her high three, which is less than a two-week paycheck. So she's pointing out the fact that if she stays till the middle of January or the 11th of January, which is the end of the leave year for 2012, she picks up some advantages. Although she is losing that 1 month of retirement check, she's picking up a paycheck, she's getting a holiday, she's put more money in her thrift, and she's getting that last accumulation of leave that's still going to be part of the 2012, you know, use or lose basket that she's not going to have to worry about losing any of that. So I think the benefits outweigh the negative. As she points out, I agree with her, that I think January 11th for some FERS employees might be the better date to retire. And we're going to face that again in 2014 because the end of 2013, you're still only going to get 50% of your sick leave credit. But if you retire January 1st of 2014, you'll get 100%. And that year, just like this year, the leave year is going to end near the middle of the month. So that's another year that I'm going to say that mid-January is probably going to be the better date for FERS employees. So these next 2 years, you know, look at that last leave period of the year, which next year it's January 12th. You know, the 11th is the Friday, so that's, you know, not a bad date.
That's another wrinkle that I hadn't thought of, the sick leave transition. Right now, people under the FERS system who retire, they can cash in their accumulated sick leave or do they apply it to their retirement or do they cash it in?
No, the sick leave is going to be just like with civil service. So if you had 1,000 hours of sick leave,
it counts for service time.
You have about 6 months of service credit, right?
So right now, if they had a year of sick leave saved up and you're a FERS employee and you retire this year, you'd get credit for 6 months.
That's right.
If you wait until January of 2014. I'm sorry, then you'll get a full year's credit for
that's
it.
Right.
So that's a major consideration.
Yeah,
it's funny that with the retirement tsunami apparently rolling along, that could cause a bump and keep people on the job through 2013.
Yeah, because now it's within sight. We can start planning on, okay,
yeah,
you know, we're seeing that difference. I mean, it's not going to be a huge amount of money for someone, but I would never tell a FERS employee if you're sick, you know, use your sick leave.
Sure.
But if you have it left over, you know, at least you're going to get some money for it. You're going to get some credit for it in the retirement calculation.
And some people have huge balances. I mean, they have a year or two of extra service time, which can really, really add up. How much? What is a year of service time for CSRS and FERS?
Well, under the old system, if you had saved up a year, and by the way, it takes 20 years to earn a year of sick leave. So this means somebody's been very healthy and haven't had to use much. So if you had saved up 2,087 hours equivalent to a year, that's worth 2% of your high three. So if your high three is $60,000, then you've just added $100 a month onto your retirement check. Now, if you're a FERS employee, cut that in half because 1 year of service under FERS is typically worth 1% of your high three. So 1 year of sick leave under FERS for the same $60,000 high three would be worth $50 a month.
Okay.
Still something.
Amazing. Yeah, there really is a lot of ways to slice and dice this.
Yeah.
By the way, our number is 202-465-3080, 202-465-3080. Tammy, is there a way to sort of slice and dice this by month? I mean, would the best day to retire in, for instance, January of this year, would it be different than the best day to retire in May or September?
Yeah, well, there's some general rules of thumb just to keep in mind. And I guess before you say anything, the first thing is to make sure that, because I think people confuse this best date to retire with can I afford to retire and am I mentally ready for this change in my life? You know, that's a whole separate issue. What I'm talking about is once you're ready to fill out the retirement application, you know you're leaving.
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to decide, do I go the end of March, the end of April? Do I wait till the 1st of June? Well, the first thing is to think about the fact that if you retire any day of the month for FERS, in any day of the month other than the first three for CSRS, your retirement's not going to start to accrue until the first day of the following month. So if I was to retire today, March 21st, my salary would stop, close the business today, and my first retirement check would be the month of April. So I'd be essentially losing a couple of weeks' pay. So it'd be better if I wait till the last day of March. So the end of the month is always good. Now, if you're CSRS, you have that grace period of 3 days every month. So if the pay period is going to end on the 1st, 2nd, or 3rd, and it's going to get you to the end of the week, then your CSRS or CSRS offset, then wait till the 2nd or 3rd. You pick up another accumulation of leave, get a full paycheck, and you'll still get a retirement check for the rest of that month. Now, the thing I'm adding to this now is for FERS employees who might only have 20 years of service or 15 years of service when they retire, that 1 month of FERS benefits only going to be worth, 15, 20% of their salary. So for them, maybe working until the first full pay period of that month, going out the middle of the month, will pick up another paycheck. They'll forfeit a month of retirement pay, but that trade-off might be worth more.
And so, I hear from people, and I'm math challenged, as anybody who knows me knows. But I've heard people say that after working for a certain amount of time, that they're losing, that they would be better off retired. Is that true, or is that an urban myth?
Well, I had a lady the other day saying that she'd just like to ease into retirement, and I said, well, how many years service do you have? And she says, well, I have 38. And I had to think to myself, well, if she has 38 years under civil service, her retirement is going to be worth 72% of her high three. And when you consider the fact that she's going to pay tax on 72% of her income, not 100%, she's not going to pay retirement contributions, she's not going to contribute to the thrift, she's not going to pay the Medicare tax, her retirement just for staying home every day is about as much as what she's bringing home coming to work. So for her to switch from full-time to part-time at the end of her career, she would lose money. Because she'd make more money just staying home and taking a part-time job at Walmart. She'd be ahead of the game. So there comes a point in time when the amount of income that your retirement's going to replace is as much as what you're making coming to work every day. You have to start to think, is it really worth coming to work and continuing on in that same career versus retiring? And if you want to work, you can still work. You can collect your retirement and then have another paycheck.
Okay. The advantage of staying in touch with people that you've known on a beat like yours and mine is after the fact that sometimes after they're retired, you learn an awful lot about how things really work. And one time I was talking to someone who had headed the retirement operation at OPM for many years, a very loyal, wonderful civil servant. But after he got out of the constraints of it, he told me one time, and he's not a type that's given to exaggeration, he said there has never been a single piece of legislation regarding the federal retirement system that didn't personally benefit some member of Congress or some congressional staffer. And when we keep talking about this retiring January 1st, 2nd, or 3rd, there was a reason for that. It was done because Congress was in session or some members of Congress needed. Do you know what that was?
I've heard the urban myth, and I'll spread it out. I'm not proud. I heard the reason for the 1st, 2nd, or 3rd for civil service was there was some congressman or some group of congressmen who were going to retire the end of December, but the vote was going to be taken at the end of the week, I guess, which was January 3rd. So they extended the law to allow them to retire on the 3rd so they could take that final vote before they retired. Whether that's true or not, I have no idea.
You know, I think maybe it is. That stirs memories in me, and I know there was another retirement.
In fact, I might have heard that from you.
Right, okay. Well, then we know it's not an urban myth. That scares you when you find out you're the source. We need to take a short break here. We'll be right back and talking with Tammy Flanagan and switch to the voluntary contributions.
My journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how Geico actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, Geico saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
Here's Mike Krieger, Deputy CIO, G6 U.S. Army, on a recent Unified Communications Panel discussion sponsored by General Dynamics IT.
One of the things that DOD is going to try to drive, along with the federal government, is the XMPP standard. Then we can all be using different products and share presence and awareness. Because without presence and awareness, you're not changing business processes. And this is all about changing the way we work, like the new generation does. And so it's critical in this discussion we focus on standards.
Connecting people to people anywhere, anytime, on any device. Not just an idea, but a demand of today's governments, businesses, and consumers. General Dynamics IT integrates voice, video, and data services to provide increased mission effectiveness. Secure communications is a basic tenet in healthcare, law enforcement, finance, and defense, and will continue to drive the future of our unified communications. Visit GDIT.com for more information. That's GDIT.com.
Meeting mission goals through IT modernization, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
The Labor Department wants states to help crack down on improper payments under the unemployment insurance program. It's created a new online tool, the Fraud Tips and Leads Gateway. It's designed to let the public report suspected fraud, then have state authorities investigate. It's also creating new consumer-facing materials designed to help keep people from making improper claims in the first place. Labor says its improper payments amounted to $19 billion over the past 3 years.
General Dynamics IT delivers the full strength of enterprise IT to drive innovation like infrastructure consolidation and modernization, cross-domain information sharing, cloud computing, Web 2.0, and a constant flow of new applications and IT services. General Dynamics IT helps government, military, and commercial organizations achieve new levels of productivity and mission effectiveness. General Dynamics IT brings together the expertise, technology, and best practices to deliver secure enterprise IT solutions. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
If you are facing advanced illness or the end of life of a loved one, peace of mind is in short supply. Fortunately, pain-free comfort care is available from the Washington Home and Community Hospices, a not-for-profit organization with a holistic team of doctors, nurses, caregivers, social workers, chaplains, and volunteers. The team comes to you in your home or wherever you call home in D.C., Montgomery, or Prince George's County. For your peace of mind, call them day or night for a complimentary consultation at 866-234-7222.
Computers can search for words very quickly, but when it comes to images, our brains are much better. So engineers are exploring how we can help computers. If you're web surfing for, say, a beautiful or funny-looking picture, search engines have a tough time knowing exactly what you want. So Paul Scheide, a Columbia University biomedical engineer, is monitoring people's brain activity as he shows them pictures at the rate of 10 a second.
You might see an image and realize, ooh, that's interesting. You might not be able to then, in that fraction of a second, really describe it in detail. You just know that it caught your attention.
Scheide says a computer can then match that brain response to a picture and look for similar images.
We know what the brain is good at in terms of visual processing. We know what computers are very good at. Our goal is to create a system that leverages the advantages of both.
Such a combo might be especially useful in high-pressure situations like stock trading or military analysis, where lots of visual information must be analyzed quickly. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey, and my guest is Tammy Flanagan. She is a benefits specialist with the National Institutes of Transition Planning, co-host on the four-year benefit show here on WFED every Monday, and also columnist for Government Executive. And you wear a number of other hats, Tammy. We don't have time to go through them all here. But our last show was also with Tammy, and we were talking about the best dates to retire. If you missed it, it is archived on our homepage, and you can get it again, and it will be subtitled something like Best Dates to Retire, and it's very complicated, and it can save you or cost you a lot of money depending on which date you pick. And we have a carryover question from that. Mike on the from the defense on the line. Mike, are you there?
Yeah, man, Mike. How
hey,
you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling. What's up?
All right. I just want to ask you, I'm getting ready to retire. I have 25 years. I'll be 60 years old. Could she tell me what percentage I would get from a wage rate 6?
Okay. Are you, you must be under the newer retirement system, right? You're under the FERS system?
I'm under the first.
Yeah. You know, at age 60, you'd get 1% of your high three. So think about your average salary over the last 3 years, which probably looks a lot like your current salary since we haven't had many pay increases.
Right.
So you get about 25% of that as your FERS retirement benefit. That's just one piece of your retirement.
Okay.
Now, in addition to that, you would also receive for the next 2 years something called a FERS supplement. And the FERS supplement's really just meant to bridge the time between your retirement and when you qualify for Social Security. So you, if you don't go back to work and start a second career, that supplement's going to pay you somewhere between $30 to $40 a month for every year that you have under FERS. So you figure that supplement might add another, you know, 25 times $35 a month added onto your monthly benefit. So both of those come from OPM, the Office of Personnel Management. So that's going to give you some significant replacement of income. Now, the third source of income you'll have is your TSP savings. And that's going to depend on, you know, what you plan to do after you retire as far as how much you want to use of that right away, how you want to make that last, how you want to create income, and how much income you really need. So, and then you have to think, too, that you know, you've got 25 years of government service at age 60, which means you probably did something else for the other 20, 30 years of your career, which
right.
may also provide income, maybe a military retirement or whatever else you might have. So that's how you would kind of pull all those pieces together and add it up and see if it's enough to cover your monthly expenses.
Okay.
And, Mike, you might want to keep an eye on Federal News Radio because, as you know, there's a number of congressional plans out there to save money, and one of them would be to eliminate that FERS supplement. And if that happened, that would be a major savings to the government, a major cost to you, and it might determine on when you retire, if that is if they make it prospective starting in 2013 or if they apply it to current employees. So keep an eye on that. And good luck to you, Mike.
Okay, Mike.
Thanks.
Tonight your show is pretty good for me.
Hey, thank you. Glad to do it. Hey, back to the voluntary contributions now. Let me kind of frame what the voluntary contributions are, and then you're probably the world's leading expert on them. But this is a program that was set up. It's for people who are only under the civil service retirement system or civil service offset. So these are people hired, and for the most part, before the mid 1980s. Mm-hmm. Under it, you can put in 10% of your lifetime income.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is ideal for somebody who wins the lottery. You know, you get a huge chunk of money or a windfall or inheritance or something. But and because very few people will ever be able to lay hands on 10% of their total federal income over a career of 20, 30, or 40 years. You can put in 10% into it. It's pre-tax, so it's after tax. So you've already paid the taxes. It's your money. You put it in, and it accrues based on a rate of interest set every year by the Treasury. And at the end of your time, when you withdraw that money, it is all tax-free.
Except for the interest.
Except for the interest. Mm-hmm. Okay. It is all tax-free.
Mm-hmm.
Very good deal for people with extra income. You can also use it to supplement slightly your federal annuity. You can parse it that way if you want mm-hmm. to. But for some people, it's been very handy. And I know there are times when the interest rate was up as high as 8%. Currently, it's paying what?
2.25% this year. Yeah, the one time when we first started talking about this way back when, it was right after the interest rate was as high as 13%. That would have been the time to be in this thing was back in the late 80s, early 90s.
Right.
The interest rates have come down for as far as leaving the money in there and earning interest. So that the point of doing voluntary contributions for someone today is it's going to be that person who wants to fund an IRA. Yeah, you want to put some money in your individual retirement arrangement, but you're limited to $5,000 or $6,000 is the yearly limit for someone to contribute to an IRA. So we have people who have saved money throughout their career. Maybe they've got it sitting in a savings account, or like you said, they won the lottery or had an inheritance. And they just have this money sitting there really doing much of nothing. You know, it might be earning 0.2% interest in the bank. So they'd really love to, you know, throw that money into an IRA, but they're limited by the $5,000 or $6,000. So what that person could do if they're under civil service retirement or offset, like you said, is they could take that money and set up a voluntary contribution account that will accept, you know, like you said, 10% of your lifetime salary. So for many CSRS employees, that's a six-figure number, you know, somewhere between 100,000 to 200,000. So they could take that 50,000 or 100,000 that they have and set up the account, dump it in there, and then if they wanted to leave it there until they retire, it will earn the interest, you know, 2.25%. Not bad considering other safe places. But then at retirement or prior to retirement, they can take a lump sum withdrawal, and then they can tell OPM that they want to transfer that money to their IRA. And you can transfer as much money as you want from one retirement account to another. So you could take the whole thing and just move it to your IRA. And then lately, in the last 2 years, there's a provision of the tax law that allows you to move that money to a Roth IRA, and then it's going to grow tax-free. So that's a nice little loophole of getting it into a Roth IRA. So that's where I've seen a lot of interest in this, is where someone has this money that they've accumulated or they've inherited or they've saved, and they want to put it someplace. You can't put it in a thrift, because the only money you can put in a TSP is money out of your paycheck, you know, tax-deferred right. savings. And even the Roth TSP won't let you do this. But if you set up this voluntary account, you can take it, you know, write a check out of your savings account, put it in this account, and then at the same time you put it in, you can tell, you know, send the withdrawal form to tell OPM to transfer it to your other account, your IRA account, which is going to go over there and then grow either tax deferred in a traditional IRA or tax free if you get it into a Roth IRA.
Right. The only limit on it is it must be in $25 increments, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So it could be 25 bucks, it could be 50, 100, just $25 divisible by
at
25. And you can put it in every 2 weeks, every month at your
whenever
leisure.
You have the money.
Right. Different amount. When you win that lottery for that week, put that money in there.
Yeah.
And it's been a very good deal. You know, for years, this thing was kind of a private savings club for people at the OPM and the old Civil Service Commission. It was set up, almost nobody knew about it, and I think when you and I tumbled to it some years back, somebody had written in and said, what about this? And we thought they were crazy and or were mistaken, mm-hmm. and discovered this thing. And there were only a few thousand people that had accounts in those days. I don't know what the numbers are now, but they peaked some years ago. Again, the bad news, if you're under FERS, which is the majority of people working, it's not for you. But if you are under the Civil Service Retirement System or CSRS offset, it's there. And the thing I noticed, too, is that I think it was 2010, as recently as that the interest rate was 8%. I think it was 6%.
It's been coming down. Yeah, there was a time it went from 13 to 11 to 9 to 8, and now it's down to 2.25. But you know, the interest rate's not bad. You kind of compare it to the G fund. The one other thing to tell people if they're considering this is to be sure you understand that if you owe money to the retirement fund, as a CSRS offset employee may have taken a refund, or if you have some temporary service, you owe a deposit, then you would need to pay those deposits back before you could add money to this account. So if you weren't planning to pay off your deposits, then again, this may not be something you want to do.
May not be. Yeah, it's something you need to really understand and check it out. It's definitely not for everybody, and you need to have excess income there. And
there's two good resources for this besides OPM.gov, because OPM does have the forms, and they have a pamphlet on it, and they have, you know, all the information you need. But you could also go to our NITP website, which is just NITPINC.com, NITPINC.com. And right on their homepage, Bob Lyons and I did a couple of shows on For Your Benefit for this, and Bob put together some tax information and some of the forms to help someone walk them through, you know, how this works. And then the other resource would be to Google this, and you can Google the name Micah Shalansky. And his name is M-I-C-A-H, Shilansky is S-H-I-L-A-N-S-K-I. And he's a financial advisor of all places from Anchorage, Alaska. And I ran into Micah when I was up in Anchorage. Really nice guy, but he's taken an interest in this all. Anybody with a financial mind is looking at this saying, wow, this is a cool deal. So he wrote a book on it. And it's a nice little guideline also. So if you just Google Micah Shilansky and voluntary contributions, you can come upon his book.
Great. Okay.
Two good resources to
learn
more.
Need to take
more.
A short break here. I'm talking with Tammy Flanagan here on 1500 AM, and we'll be right back.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, every Friday morning at 11. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to FedTalk at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week on Fed Talk, host Tony Vernetti will be joined by guests from the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission and the Association of Federal External Civil Rights Specialists to hear about recent EEOC issues and events.
Hey everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, DC's one and only and best food and wine variety show.
Join us Sunday, March 25th. We're going to get pickled in studio with Gordy's Pickles. They're local pickle makers. They're going to show us all their wares. And if you're into vegetarian food, we've got the chef for you. Chef Adam Barnett is in from Eventide.
I can't believe he made that pickle joke. Anyway, that's Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday live right here on 1500 AM.
Here's an inspiring story provided by Insperity.
Hi, I'm Tony Sterling, Vice President of Project Support Services Incorporated, a service-disabled veteran-owned small business. We provide project and contract support services to federal, state, and local government. I wear many hats in my job, as I'm sure most of you do, in small and mid-market companies. In 2008, we had only 46 employees. Now, thanks to Insperity's diverse spectrum of services, we have 156 employees and a true national footprint. One of the keys to our rapid growth is Insperity. They give us the resources of a large corporation in areas like HR, payroll, recruiting, training, and consulting on compliance issues. It's comforting to know that we have Insperity in our corner.
Insperity understands the many challenges faced by the federal contracting community. You need the right resources to give you the competitive advantage. Insperity's multi-state infrastructure gives you big company resources without compromising your status. Call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Giving you the edge on healthy living, here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge. A recent study is challenging conventional thinking when it comes to estrogen.
It is normally believed that estrogen is always bad for the brain because it causes blood clotting, which can then block the blood flow to the brain.
In other words, stroke. Dr. Walter Rocha is a Mayo Clinic neurologist and epidemiologist who led the study, which found
evidence that estrogen in young women may actually be protective or prevent the occurrence of stroke rather than being a risk factor.
Now, each patient is different, so Dr. Rocha suggests women who have experienced early menopause, that is, earlier than age 45, or premature menopause, which is before the age of 40, should talk with their doctor about whether or not estrogen therapy would make sense in their case. For more information, talk with your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Tracy McRae.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Rising government leaders are registering now to attend Excellence in Government, the nation's only event focused on helping managers achieve more mission for the money. Here, top officials and thought leaders share transformative new ways of operating, network with peers, and join the conversations which are reshaping government. Join your federal colleagues for Excellence in Government, May 7th in Washington, D.C., to get the ideas you need now to transform your agency, your program, and your career. Register today at excellenceingov.com. Want the latest Department of Defense news? Listen every Wednesday for DoD Wednesday on Federal News Radio. Wednesday afternoons at 2, Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. Then stick around Wednesday afternoons at 3 when in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a deep dive into the issues and challenges of the defense community. All this plus our daily DoD updates at 40 past the hour, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and I'm talking with Tammy Flanagan. She's a columnist for Government Executive Magazine, co-host on the four-year benefit show sponsored by the National Institutes of Transition Planning. And she just gave you NITPINC.com, their website, their homepage for a variety of things, including some really good stuff about the Voluntary Contributions Program. The Voluntary Contributions Program is open only to civil service and civil service offset employees, which is a sizable number of people, but dwindling. And we just had an off-air call from someone, and he wanted to know if you can make contributions to the VC program via payroll deduction. And the answer is no. It's only by personal check or, I guess, money order in increments of $25, but you cannot do it payroll deduction.
You can also do pay.gov, which is you can put your credit card in and get airline miles and make your contributions
to
your credit card.
Very good. Tammy, so we're talking about what we would talk about next, and she said we've left the FERS people out talking about the voluntary contributions, and so get into that, the Federal Employees Retirement System and the Thrift Savings Plan for FERS people. Those who put in at least 5% get a 5% match from the government. That's the equivalent. Well, it's not, it is a 5% tax-deferred pay raise from the government.
Exactly,
it's
right.
A gift. And
that.
Everybody who's investing in the TSP, if they're FERS, should put in at least 5%. Do whatever you can do. Give up smoking or something, but put in that 5% to get that match. Double your investment down the road. It's an incredible amount of money. And if you put in 10, then you're getting a total of 15, you know, five from the government, 10 from the...
You almost can't not do it because
really?
You know, how are you going to retire someday if you're just going to live on, you know, that one check from OPM? It's not going to be enough. It never was meant to be.
Right. And FERS was set up, it's like a milking stool. It's mm-hmm. got three legs, mm-hmm. a civil service benefit, which is less generous than the CSRS people, Social Security component, which is a good deal, mm-hmm. very good deal, and then the FERS, the Thrift Savings Plan, mm-hmm. your money plus the government payment mm-hmm. into it.
You need all three.
You need it. It's an integral part of it, and every now and then I delight in doing a column about how many TSP millionaires there are now, and there are a goodly number of mm-hmm. them and a huge number of people who have more than $500,000.
Yep.
Many of the TSP millionaires, many but not all, are we believe they're federal judges. They were very prosperous lawyers and or members of Congress, and they came into the government service, and they looked around and said the TSP is so much better than anything out there, so they transferred their money in.
Mm-hmm. And you can do that with a TSP 60. If you're coming in from private industry and you want to take advantage of the low operating expenses and the simplicity of the thrift, you just get a TSP 60 to transfer your money from either your old 401k plan or your rollover IRA plan. Any money that's never been taxed before can move into the TSP, so people have taken advantage of that, like you said.
And it's funny, people, the grass is always greener. There are a lot of federal workers who think the TSP could be better. Francis Rose and I interviewed John Bogle, the father of the index funds and the founder of Vanguard, a couple of years ago, and he said he would give anything if he could get into the TSP. Mm-hmm. More recently, Alan Roth of CBS Money Watch has said he's looking for a way to get into the TSP. They're joking, of course, they can't do it unless they became feds. But these are the experts, and they say there's nothing better than the TSP, primarily because of your extra component, the 5% from the government, and also the low administrative fees. So
and
really
and even
a good
the
deal.
Simplicity. They've discovered that, you know, plans that offer 20, 30 different choices for investment almost discourage employees to invest because it's so complicated.
It's truly mm-hmm. paralysis by analysis. Mm-hmm. There's too many options out there. And people, it's funny, you remember a couple of years back, the big crusade to have a gold fund and a REIT, real estate trust. You don't hear that anymore.
No.
And then the NASDAQ, people wanted to set up a NASDAQ fund. Mm-hmm. That's down 40% from its peak in year 2000. So, the diversity is not always a good thing. The kind of diversity you have in the TSP is very good. You have the C fund, which has the 500 largest companies in the U.S., the S fund, which is just about everybody else, and then the I fund, an international cap that has most of the world except for Japan. Mm-hmm. And even that turned out to be a good move given the tsunami there a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's a very good program. So what do you tell people to do with their TSP money?
Well, what I do when I teach a seminar in the TSP or for FERS employees who are planning to retire, I go over the options you have, because what I tell employees is that you have as much control over what you do with this money after you retire as you had on how much you put in and where you invest it. So you really have to think in terms of, you know, add up what you do know, you know, figure out what your FERS benefit's going to provide, how much you're going to have coming in from Social Security, and look at that on a monthly basis and figure out what's the deficit. You know, do I need another $1,000 a month to make up, you know, the money I need to pay my bills, or is it $3,000 a month? And then you have a variety of ways you can withdraw that. You can tell the TSP just to send you a check every month. And however much they send you, that's going to be your taxable income. So make sure you take enough out to pay the taxes and then pay your bills. So once a year, if you do a monthly payment plan, you can tell the TSP, I need more next year, or don't send me so much, or, you know, you can change that one time a year. Now, if you're not, you know, comfortable with that because you think, well, what if I take out too much and then I deplete the money before I die? Well, then you can tell the TSP, why don't you guys calculate it? And they'll compute the benefit payment to you based on your life expectancy. So every year as you get older, you'll get a bigger check conceivably because your life expectancy gets a little bit less every year. So if you tell them do it on life expectancy, they'll just take your balance and divide it by your life expectancy factor every year and recompute the benefit once a year. That's another way to do it. Now, another thing that the TSP offers is a life annuity. And I want to make sure when people think about buying that life annuity that they understand what they're buying. Because when you do that, the money leaves the thrift plan. And it's going to be used to purchase an annuity through MetLife. Because the contractor that holds the annuity contract with the TSP is MetLife. So you're basically giving your money to MetLife in exchange for the security of knowing that you're going to get a check every month as long as you live. So if you live a long time, you get more back than what you gave them. If you die early, well, you lost. But what you have to remember is that you can add features to protect the annuity. You can say, I want a cash refund, so if I die early, my sister gets what's left. Or I want a survivor benefit so that if I die before my spouse, they can get part of it. But the more features you add, cost of living adjustments, another feature, that's going to lower your monthly check. And you have no control over it at this point. You're going to get that check every month as long as you live. And if you need more money one year, too bad, that's all you're getting. Or if interest rates improve, because right now the annuity rate is very low, too bad you locked in that low rate. So make sure that you understand what the annuity really is. It's a sense of security, but you've given up all control of your money. So that's a pretty big trade-off to make. And the nice thing is you don't have to do any one of those. You can say, I'll do a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and maybe I'll even take some of it and move it to an IRA. And the reason why you might want to take some out of the TSP is because then you can take it out as you need it, just in a chunk for this or payment for that, where you don't have to necessarily do a monthly check. So, like I said, you have as much control over taking it out as you had putting it in.
And, you know, another advantage of that, or you call it mad money or whatever mm-hmm. you want, but I know when I was at the Washington Post, they had a window there where we could take money out of our 401k plan. We could take a certain amount out and do with it what we wanted. And, of course, everybody rolled it over into an IRA. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't – I didn't take much. My friend didn't take much. But then we were entrepreneurs. We were typical guys. Mm-hmm. We knew we could read the market and time it. Well, we didn't do as well as if we had left it in Vanguard. But it was fun. It was mad money, and it was fun, and we could jump around. But need to take a short break here. Coming right back with Tammy Flanagan.